بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم، صلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين. In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful. This is lesson 12 of the book Philosophical Instructions, and it is our 15th session that we have been studying the book Philosophical Instructions. This lesson is about the principles of epistemology, and that they are self-evident and they do not need to be proved. There are several issues, several problems that are studied in this lesson. First of all, the author begins with a description of the way philosophy needs epistemology. So he says that we should know that if we consider the general and the broad sense of the term episteme or knowledge or al-ilm or al-ma'rifah, then we will need to discuss many issues. Even, for example, issues such as the truth of mystical experiences, mystical visions, or about the way that we know something through revelation. All these things will be included. But what is common among epistemologists is that they just discuss about our perceptual knowledge and our intellectual knowledge. So, knowledge that we may have by intuition or, for example, by mystical visions or by revelation are excluded. And regarding those problems which are related to perceptual knowledge and intellectual knowledge, still, we will be selective. We will not talk about all problems which are studied by the epistemologist today, because many of them are not relevant to us. What we will be doing here in this very quick review and study of epistemological questions is to focus on those problems which are crucial for us before doing our Islamic philosophy. So we need to discuss about several issues which will help our study of Islamic philosophy. In other words, we will concentrate on those issues or problems which are needed to show the truth of philosophical positions of Muslim philosophers. So those which are needed for metaphysics or for theology, and in a sense for moral philosophy and philosophical psychology, these will be relevant to us. But other questions of epistemology which are not related to these metaphysics, theology, moral philosophy and philosophical psychology, or in other words, to the positions that we need for our Islamic philosophy in general, will be not discussed in the following lessons. Having said that, the first question which arises here is that what are the principles of epistemology? If you remember, we said that usually sciences have two sorts of principles. al-mabadi' at-tasawwuriyya and al-mabadi' at-tasdiqiyya. Sometimes there are principles which are conceptual, which are notions that we need to be before we could begin that discipline, and sometimes there are propositions that we need, there are assertions that we need. So the question here is, are there assertive principles for epistemology, and if there are, where are they proved? So the author says that epistemology does not need any prior assertive principles. The reason is that all what is discussed in epistemology is self-evident. There is no any underlying or more fundamental knowledge which can help epistemology, which can prove the principles needed for epistemology. Indeed, epistemology itself is a set of propositions, a set of assertions that we can know by ourselves, like logic. If you remember, we had this discussion before, that philosophy can be considered as mother of other sciences. And philosophy itself does not need any science to prove its principles. The only exceptions were logic and epistemology, because we need to know logic and epistemology before philosophy. But even that, having said that, we told before, and we will say again here, that those ideas that we need in logic and epistemology, they are some things that we know automatically. There's something that are self-evident. The only help that a study of logic can provide is to make those things that we already know, those things that our mind works according to them automatically, make them cleared, make them clarified, articulated, so that we don't make mistakes. So when you are studying logic, you are not adding to your knowledge. You are not acquiring something about the world external. You are not learning something which is foreign or which is strange to you. No, when you study logic, you are discovering the way that your mind works. It is just a matter of rediscovering what we already know by our nature. The same is true about epistemology. So when we will study the possibility of knowing something and different sorts of knowledge, then it's just a matter of rediscovering what is already within us. So, if you say that, are there any disciplines that can serve epistemology, the answer would be no. If you say, is epistemology serving philosophy in arguing, in proving, in demonstrating the principles which are needed for philosophy, again, the answer is no. Because those principles which are needed for philosophy are self-evident. And the role of epistemology here is not to prove. It's rather an expository role. It's a matter of clarification, not a matter of demonstration. So this is very important to bear in mind. So epistemology helps a student of philosophy to be able to expose, clarify what he himself already knows by nature. And again, epistemology helps a student of philosophy to be able to refute the challenges, the questions raised by those who do not believe in the possibility of knowing something. So you should know how to refute them. Something new that is mentioned here in this lesson is that epistemology helps philosophy also in another sense, in another way. And that is to bring about a secondary knowledge, a knowledge about knowledge. In philosophy, you know many things about logic, about epistemology, automatically, by nature. You don't need necessarily to study sometime logic and sometime epistemology and then enter into the field of philosophy. There are many things that already you know. Not only you as a student of philosophy, but ordinary people. Even the people who are not studying philosophy, they know many, many of these things. But there is a difference between knowing something and knowing that you know something. This is a secondary knowledge. We know automatically, we know by our nature many rules of deduction. How can we argue from something for something else? But we may not be able to explain, we may not be able to articulate the requirements and conditions related to the form of the argument or to the content of the argument. So the benefit of learning logic is to help us to know what we know. The benefit of epistemology is to help us to know what we already know. And this is very important. Because when you have this secondary knowledge, it means that you are fully aware of what you are doing. And you are supervising your knowledge. You are observing your knowledge so that you can make sure that there is nothing missing there. There is no shortcoming there. There is no mistake there. There are no mistakes there. So the need that we have for logic and epistemology is to double our knowledge, to have knowledge about our knowledge. This is also something that is important and we should consider and bear in mind. So up to now we have said that many, many problems are included in epistemology, can be included in epistemology, but conventionally, ordinarily, they are not discussed, and the epistemologists today are mostly concerned with those matters which are related to perceptual knowledge and intellectual or rational knowledge. Secondly, we said that among those issues, we are only concerned with those issues which are important for us as a student of philosophy who wants to study metaphysics, theology, moral philosophy, and philosophical psychology. So anything other than that will not be relevant to us in our study here. And then we said that epistemology is not in need of any prior, any more underlying or fundamental discipline to provide it with principle. We said that the principles that we need for epistemology are self-evident. Then we said the same is true about philosophy, and we said that the help that epistemology and logic offer to philosophy is not to prove the principles of philosophy. No, it's to expose, to clarify those principles which are self-evident by themselves. And then we said that secondly, logic and epistemology help us to have knowledge about what we know, to make us aware of what we already know. And this is very important so that we can get rid of the doubts, questions, and indeed challenges which are created by those who are skeptic about the possibility of knowing something. Okay. The other question here in this lesson is about the possibility of knowing something. Every rational human being presupposes in all his daily life that he knows something, he is able to know something, and even if he is aware that he may have already made some mistakes in his judgments, but still he supposes that the way to know knowledge is open, fully open. This is why there are many, many scholars, many, many scientists, many, many philosophers, many, many students who day by day try to increase their knowledge. So this shows that we all have this supposition in our mind that we can know, we can learn, we can increase our information about the world around us and about ourselves. So there seems to be no doubt about this matter. But during the human history, the history of mankind, there have been periods, there have been ages in which the waves of skepticism have come into the scene. And there have been people who have expressed their doubts even about the possibility of knowledge. Of course, these people in their ordinary life, in their activities, they were not skeptics. They were acting like other people. If they wanted to know the news, they were listening to radio or they were reading, for example, newspapers and magazines. If they wanted to increase their knowledge about their field of study, they were going to libraries and take the books and read them. So they were thinking that there is a possibility of knowing something. They were arguing with their counterparts, with their colleagues, opponents or proponents. So this shows that they had this idea in their mind that we can know something, we can convince each other, we can defend our positions, and we can refute wrong positions of others, or we can discover that our own position is mistaken. But in theory, they were saying that we are skeptic about the possibility of knowing something. For example, a very famous statement is made by one of the early Sufis, and he said that there is nothing outside, there is nothing around us, and if there were something, we couldn't know that, and if we could know that, we couldn't explain it to others and let others know. So three steps of skepticism. First of all, an ontological skepticism. Doubt about realities. Doubt about the things that exist outside. So he said, there is nothing outside us. We don't know. Secondly, epistemological skepticism. If there are some things, we cannot know them. And thirdly, again, epistemological, that if we know, if by chance I know something, I cannot let you know. So this is a very profound statement of skepticism. But whether this person or other people like him really were committed to this, it's very dubious. And most of these problems, these questions, were only in theory and perhaps were caused by some confusions or by some ambiguous questions that they were not able to answer. So they step by step were forced to come to these strange judgments. The author says that what we can say is that if someone has doubt about people around him, about sun and moon, about everything, this person who doubts cannot have doubt about himself, about his own faculties, his own feelings, and indeed about his own doubt. You may have doubt about everything, but can you have doubt about your doubt? So the fact that you have doubt is not dubious. This is something that you know for sure. If someone says that I have doubt about everything, and I have doubt about my doubt, so I even do not know that I have doubt, so this person is someone who may be treated as ill person, and there is no way to argue for this person, to argue and discuss with this person. So whoever is actively involved in philosophy, in arguing for philosophical positions, even if his position is a skepticism, it means that he accepts that he knows something, and more importantly, that there is a way to communicate and convince each other. This is very important. So the author says it's possible to accept that we may have some doubt about the world around us, whether they are really external, whether they really exist outside us, or that they are images in our mind, or that they are realities which are based upon our own imagination, upon our own existence. Like what seems to be the position developed by Berkeley, who was saying that we may know that there are things around us, and he himself was endorsing that there are worlds, many, many things around us, but he was saying that there is no material substance, they are all a spiritual substance. The author says it's possible to accept that. I mean, it's possible to imagine that, not in the sense that we agree with him. But you can imagine that there is someone who accepts everything, but he just says that these are not material substances. These are some things which exist in the mind of God and in our minds. Of course, there are many serious questions, and this idea is not acceptable. But indeed, this is much better than someone who says, I do not accept anything, I do not believe in the reality of anything, and even I do not believe in the reality of my doubt, and I do not believe in reality of myself. So those positions which are adopted by people like Berkeley or Berkeley are much better than positions of these people. Many skeptics have not been so odd. They have not been saying that we do not believe in the reality of our doubt. But if there is some person saying this, this person is someone who cannot be taken seriously in the philosophical world. This person is someone who must be treated as ill person. Okay. So, If someone says that there is no way to have certain knowledge, to have some knowledge, to have some information that we know for sure, so we ask him, do you believe in what you say? Do you have certainty about the fact that there is no certain knowledge, or you are in doubt? If he says, if he replies that I am sure, I am certain that there is no certain knowledge, you say, okay, so this itself is a certain knowledge. You say, I am certain that there is no certain knowledge. So this is itself a fact that you know for sure. And if he says, I am in doubt, I am not sure that there is no certain knowledge, so it means that he accepts the possibility of having certain knowledge. Because if he says, I am in doubt, so it means that he is not sure. So he must accept that there is a great possibility for having certain knowledge. And if he says that I have doubt about the possibility of having certain knowledge, and I have doubt about my doubt, and I have doubt about my doubt about my doubt, and goes endlessly to add to these series of doubts, so this person cannot be, as I said before, cannot be taken a serious philosopher or a serious student of philosophy. I don't mean by a student of philosophy someone who has registered for some courses in philosophy. I mean by a student of philosophy those who are studying philosophy. So in a sense, all people who are involved are students of philosophy. Anyway, similar to this point, the author says that if someone says that human knowledge is relative, in the sense that we have no universal, no absolute, no necessary knowledge. So we ask him, do you believe that the same position, that we have no universal, absolute, necessary knowledge, do you believe that this position itself is relative or absolute? Is necessary or unnecessary? If he says that this is necessary, this is absolute, this is not relative, so this means that he has refuted himself. This means that he himself has shown us a case, an example of non-relative knowledge. If he says that this statement itself is relative, it means that the fact that there is no absolute or universal or necessary knowledge is not always true. Because if he says that this is relative, it means that the position that he has is not always true. So we may find cases in which our knowledge is absolute, is universal, is necessary. So, either he says that this statement, that our knowledge is relative, either he says that this statement is absolute, so it means that he has accepted something as absolute knowledge. Or he says that this statement is not absolute, so it means that it's not always true. So you see how the person refutes himself, and how this position is self-refuting. Okay. One of the main arguments of a skeptic philosophers has been to show, to identify, and sometimes to magnify the mistakes that happen in our perceptual knowledge, and by concentration of these mistakes, they try to say that there is no possibility of knowledge at all. And so the way that these people argue is that we know there are mistakes. For example, if you have some containers of water, one is, for example, full of cold water, the other is full of hot water, and then you put your right hand in the cold water and left hand in the hot water, and keep your hands in those containers for a while. Then after that, put both your hands in a container which has water with moderate temperature. So each hand will have some feeling about the temperature which is against the other hand. The hand which was in the cold water before now feels warm. The hand which was in the hot water now feels cold. And we know that there is only one temperature for water, because they are both put in the same water. And many mistakes, for example, our vision happens. So these mistakes, which are related to our perceptual knowledge, not only are mistakes about those feelings, but only they extend to other cases. Because when you make mistakes in some cases, so there is no guarantee that you are not making mistakes in other cases. So these people try to say and stress on this point, that if we make few mistakes, we will lose our trust in other judgments that we have. Perhaps we are making mistakes in those cases, but we have not yet been able to discover our own mistakes. So they want to make all our judgments, all our beliefs useless and not reliable. The author says that it's true that we make mistakes, and this is why we try to learn logic, we try to learn methodology for each science, so that we can argue properly, we can have safe and sound argument, we can show steps that we have taken to come to some conclusion. But no one, no scientist, no philosopher, no scholar, no serious student of any field of study has never said that because we have made some mistakes, so we must close up all our inquiries and investigations and studies. No. If we have made some mistakes, it must make us determine to make more and more articulations of logic and methodology. It might make us more determined to study and to checking all different possibilities of making mistakes. So it does not stop us from studying. It should encourage us to do more studies. This is very important. So a philosopher who is faced with mistakes of some other philosophers should be encouraged to do more philosophical works, to take philosophy more seriously, so that he can get rid of those mistakes. So let's go back to the position of these people. So when they say that we have had some mistakes, and because of those mistakes we lose our trust in other judgments that we make, the author says that this means that first of all, you have had some knowledge about the truth of your position. So you believe that skepticism is true, and this is refuting your own position that there is no way to know something. Secondly, when you say that we have been able to identify our mistakes, we know that we have had some mistakes. So again, this is a knowledge. Knowing that you have made mistakes by itself is a knowledge. So you have had some knowledge. So you accept that you have had some certain knowledge. Then you say that there have been some realities that we made mistakes in knowing those realities. For example, the temperature of water was the same, was moderate, but we had two conflicting feelings. So it means that you believed that there was a water and the water had the same temperature. So this is also some other realities that you have to accept. Or for example, when you say that I have made mistakes, or the person who does this has made mistakes, so this means that you have accepted that you are there, or the person who was making mistakes is there. So you have accepted the reality of people. And also, when you are arguing for your position, you say that we have had mistakes in our perceptual knowledge, so we lose our trust in our other knowledge. So this means that you believe in this argument and you believe in the possibility of arguing to convince other people. So this is also something that you know and you have taken as granted. And the other thing that you have taken as granted is the principle of contradiction. So you say, this perceptual knowledge and information were not correct, were false. So you have accepted that if they were false, they couldn't be true. Because if they could be true, so why should we lose our trust? So they were false and necessarily not true. Why this necessity is there? It's because you believe, you know for sure, that there is no way to have contradiction. So it means that you have already believed in the principle of contradiction. So even a simple position like this requires, implies many, many sorts of human knowledge. So it's not really possible to find a person who has no knowledge, even no single knowledge. Inshallah, in the following lessons, we will continue our discussions about epistemology. And in the next lesson, lesson 13, we will talk about different sorts or different types of knowledge. وآخر دعوانا أن الحمد لله رب العالمين.